Could you imagine if the Phantom was just a weeping angel?
Every time Christine turned to him, he just had to like lock up. So mid song,
close your eyes and return.
For those of you not in the room with us, which today is nobody, I looked away from Zach, which is when he continued singing.
Can I tell you something really funny? I didn't do that on purpose. That was just as long as I could hold that note.
Hey, do it for the bit, bud. Stick it with the bit.
And welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. And Zach, mm-hmm. I'm a little scared for this episode.
A little scared. Why would you be scared?
Because it's
they're going to go to the Big Apple.
They're going to see a big city. They're going to look at all the big things. Broadway. The Empire State Building.
Peaches and
bugs. You know, there were
bugs.
Dogs in the Empire State Building.
I do remember that, Zachary. I also know that there's a big old peach in the middle of Central Park.
Did you know there are over 200 beavers in Central Park?
He got me with my own bit. Oh my guts.
It's betrayal of the worst kind. We are going to watch Series 7, Episode 5, The Angels Take Manhattan.
The lesser known Muppet sequel.
The movie where the Muppets cross over with Angels in the Outfield.
Precisely.
Where you can't tell if Christopher Lloyd is an angel or a Muppet.
Oh, my God. Okay, we'll get into... I've already cooked up another little game for us.
Okay.
But you've now opened up a time vortex wormhole in which Christopher Lloyd as Doc Brown is both Doctor Who and Doc Brown in The Muppets Take Manhattan.
That's pretty good. I like it.
Thank you.
So what might you be expecting from The Angels Take Manhattan, Cassie?
Picture this.
All right.
Manhattan, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
The Angels are back. Blink is back. We're doing Blink.
Mr. Blink's in the room.
We're doing Blink, but bigger. Well, because I feel like they're going to try to like reel in and bounce back from a picture of an angel becomes an angel. And either make it bigger and dumber,
mm-hmm.
or they're going to go, okay, let's bring it back to our roots, baby. Let's just,
like
at the very end of that of Blink, mm-hmm. they just show all of these fucking statues and gargoyles.
So you think they're either going to double down on like the angels look like the weeping angels we know, or they could be any statue again. Like you're seeing a pivot one way or the
other. Yes.
Okay.
Let's do Blink, but bigger.
Do you think that anytime someone turns and looks at a weeping angel and it freezes, it has to go, I'm walking here.
Hey. It just stops going, hey. It stops middle Dustin Hoffman swapping the car.
Instead of them like coming at you with like claws, they give you like finger guns.
Instead of coming at you with claws, they just put their arms up and their brows furrow. Hey!
All the weeping angels are wearing Yankees caps.
That you're going to say all the weeping angels are wearing taxi driver outfits. They're all wearing black and white checkers and yellow.
Hey, I'll get you there lickety split. But the thing is, before we do anything back there in the back seat, you got to close your eyes.
That's
the only way I can move this car.
I'll get you to wherever you need to go. But in the meantime.
Well, with that in mind, why don't we get to the Cassie Profassi a little bit today?
Oh, jeez.
I feel a little bad because I feel like I'm going to spoil a little bit of it for you, but I couldn't come up with a question better than this.
That's okay.
To me, because we do get to see a little more of what the Weeping Angels could look like. And Cassie, I'm curious, what do you think baby weeping angels look like?
Oh, no! Not the babies! Oh, jeez. I gotta put my microphone down for this one. Oh, my God!
No, we
baby angels! The cherubs.
Little babies.
I feel like that's the most obvious thing, and that's the first thing I'm gonna say.
Okay.
Is that they're cherubs.
All right, little cherubs. All right, I'll take that.
I think so.
Absolutely.
Well, because adult weeping angels are scary women sitting on with two stiff skirts and bicycle seats. Yeah, you showed me that.
Yeah, I did show you that.
The special feature.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool. Ah, oh, that's so cool. I think that's why I like Weeping Angels as much as I do, is because, like, mechanically speaking, in order to achieve that effect, you have to do some, like, in-camera magic. So, bearing that in mind, though, I do think that the baby angels are going to be scarier.
All right, so just a little... But you think they're going to be cherubs with fangs, basically?
Basically, yeah, because that's fucking... That's frightening. Babies, yeah, in general are already scary, because little-known fact, they have talons. I don't know if you knew this about
babies.
They
have talons and no knees.
My God.
Their legs are just noodles.
Talons, no knees, and absolutely zero fucks given.
This episode also features the return of One River Song.
Yay!
In this episode, the Doctor and company find a book about River Song, where she has been written to be what profession? I've got some choices for you here.
Okay.
Is she A, a detective?
Uh-huh.
B, a medical doctor?
Okay.
C, a foreign diplomat?
Uh-huh.
Or D, a zookeeper?
Ooh. Oh,
try to make them all really different for you, so you weren't like.
Ooh, I mean, A right out the gate sounded like a
thing you hear in New York City, baby.
Yeah, but I can't remember what it was other than
it was
that
a detective.
Detective River Song, the finder of the doctor and no one else,
investigating his privates.
Can I
ask?
Mean
a private investigator.
You're a cut up. Can I ask what year this takes place?
So it takes place at two different time periods. It takes place in 2012 in modern day,
uh-huh,
and it also takes place in 1938.
Okay. Oh, so I said 1940s?
Yeah.
Detective. Done.
Okay.
I like Zookeeper a whole lot.
You just like the idea of River Song covered in birds.
Oh my God.
That's your dream come true.
That's how she travels. She just flies away.
She doesn't travel in time. She travels via bird wing, via bird arms.
Yeah, via hundreds of birds. Tens and hundreds of birds.
All right. Well,
yeah, detective. I think of the options, detective and zookeeper are the ones that really stuck out because I like zookeeper a lot. I don't think that's the case. I'm going to be pleased as punch if it is.
I also am doing a little spin on the Cassie's favorite moment for this episode.
Uh-huh.
Because as we've already discussed, the Weeping Angels are back in this one. I feel like it would be inappropriate to call something a favorite moment involving the Weeping Angels.
So
I've labeled it as least favorite moment.
Oh.
Because
well, see, that's the thing.
The moment that will make you go, no.
Hey, kids, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Zach knows me very well.
We've been together a minute here.
A minute, just a couple minutes. We just met.
That's true. We did just meet. In the grand scale of the cosmos, we did just meet.
We did just meet.
Well, let's find out together if baby weeping angels are just little cherubs.
Hey, can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
How do you spell cherub?
Cherub.
Okay, I put two R's, yeah, and I was like, what's a cherub?
Nope, just Cherub.
Hey, do you remember in that one Night at the Museum? Oh, wait, you haven't seen those.
I've only seen the first two.
Oh, yes, and you know in the second one, the Jonas Brothers are cherubs.
Yes, I do remember that.
I think about that a lot. That's it.
Because that's the part in the movie where you went, no!
I mean, it was... at the time I was watching it going, stupid. But I was also really, really happy to see Amy Adams as
Amelia Earhart.
Yes. I was going to say Amelia Pond, and I went, hang on, wrong one.
Yeah. That would have been a fun thing for them
to
do.
That is blessed casting.
Yes, absolutely. Well, anyway, as I was saying, let's find out together if baby weeping angels are just little cherubs, and if there's a book about River Song, but she's been rewritten to be a detective, watch The Angels Take Manhattan, baby.
The angels, they're flying over here.
You're in my mama's ragu, the angels they are.
Oy, Gavalt, the angels, they're everywhere. I keep swatting at them like the birds.
New York. Hey, listen up. This episode here is brought to you by Forget About Kit, the only monthly subscription box that helps you become an authentic, unfiltered, over-caffeinated New Yorker, baby. Each month, you get a curated box of must-haves, like a half-full Metro card, one ratty Yankees cap pre-sweated in by a guy named Tony, a coffee cup from a deli that no longer exists, and a menu from a place that definitely does not deliver to you. And under no circumstances will you ever, and I mean ever, get an I Heart New York t-shirt. You'll be cursing at tourists, jaywalking with confidence, and identifying neighborhoods by smell in no time. Use promo code A Bada Bing to get your first box half price and a bonus roll of parking tickets you have no intention of paying. That's A Bada Bing with 3 Y's. We use the proper spelling around here. Forget about Kit. Get tough, get loud, get lost trying to transfer from the G to the 6. And we are back from The Angels Take Manhattan.
You know, I wasn't expecting this to be the end.
Yeah. I tried very, very hard to keep that a secret.
Yeah, well, because there's a part of me that's like, also, spoiler alert.
Well, I feel like every time before, like, has always been, and like, it's always been at the end of a season. So it's always been like, there's a break here.
Well, because it also feels like, and I had a sneaking suspicion because the next episode after this is the Christmas special, which seems to be the indicator of change.
Often, yeah. That's oftentimes when they have... even Tennant didn't necessarily meet his new companion, but that was always a break for him between companions.
So there was a very small part of me that was like, huh, that's strange and interesting. And another part that feels like it came a little too sudden, but also, like, I can't think of any other way for their story to end.
Yeah, other than with each other.
Well, yeah, because that's literally their whole arc.
Yeah.
Has been each other.
Yeah, has been being apart but together and coming together.
Always coming back. Like, yeah. What is the word I'm looking for? Like a, not a yo-yo. like a Newton ball? Give me a second. You know, like the ones that you put on your desk and...
Oh, okay.
You know, put apart and then it always comes back together. And
oh, okay.
Like a slingshot, a boomerang.
I'm sure there's something. I'm not able to think of what you're talking about either. But yeah, that is the end of Amy and Rory as the Doctor's companions. So if you remember that when we did our little fashion show and I showed you all the TARDISes and there was one that you thought was really depressing.
Yeah.
That's after this episode.
Okay, I was going to ask, is it because the Doctor is going through like an emo phase?
Yeah, the Doctor is very sad that he's lost Amy and Rory.
Well, because they also made a whole big thing about like, don't let the Doctor see you age. He hates endings.
Yeah.
That's one hell of a way. And especially in the episode right before this, we saw Amy and Rory saying, it might be nice to have, oh no, Brian.
Yeah, Brian... Literally last episode told them that they should go on this journey.
One last job.
Would you like to find out what happens to Brian? Because I was going to find a way to segue into this, but you actually did a great job for me.
I'm really good at that.
They wrote a short for the DVDs that takes place after this episode to show you. Oh, my God. Sorry.
Are you crying?
Yes.
Aw, you snivelly bitch.
This is a short called P.S. I think a lot of people...
Stands for Paige Shima.
A lot of people really love this short. I will tell you, it is strictly done in like a storyboard style, but it is the story of Brian finding out about Amy and Rory and how he finds out.
Oh no!
So we're gonna watch this real quick. It's only 4 minutes long, so we will be right back after we watch P.S., which you can find on the BBC's YouTube channel. So you can just look up Doctor Who P.S. and it comes up for you. So if you want to watch it and you haven't, it's really nice. It's written by Chris Chibnall, future showrunner when the 13th Doctor takes over.
Isn't he also the man who wrote the episode previous to this?
He wrote both Dinosaurs on a Spaceship and The Power of Three and Pond Life. Mm. I think because he did so much this season as like sort of a backup writer for doing these other things for Moffat is probably why he got the job when Moffat left. But anyway, that's beside the point. For now, at least we will. I wanted to show you the short. So we're going to watch Doctor Who P.S. We'll be right back.
It's the kind of hurt. It's the kind of sad that makes the back of your throat hurt. Oh, my God.
It's worth noting we are recording this episode on Father's Day 2025.
Jesus. Fuck right off,
Can
Zach.
You believe they didn't film that scene?
Yes, I actually can.
Like, fuck?
Where would you put it?
Post credits.
I suppose.
This was after, like, Iron Man had made it a thing. You could do it. Oh, my God.
Like, I'm not kidding, but, like, I am weeping solemnly to myself.
Meanwhile, I think I'm, like, full-on ugly crying.
Yes, you are, which is strange because I'm the one with daddy issues. Son of a bitch. God, it makes your face hurt.
Yeah, it...
makes your face hurt,
Zach. I think it also... The Power of Three did a really good job of making you like Brian.
Oh, yes.
So
you as in the royal you or you as in me?
You specifically, but also you in the general. Like, okay. The audience.
Okay.
Like, Chris Chibnall is the only writer who wrote Brian. He wrote him in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. He wrote him in The Power of Three. And he wrote him in this short. Brian didn't appear in anything Chris Chibnall did not write.
Mm.
And as such, it is a character wholly of Chris Chibnall's sort of... creation.
So there's a non-zero chance that Mr. Chibnall just went, yes, the perfect father.
I believe the story was that Stephen Moffat actually came up with the scene, but he knew he couldn't put it anywhere. So then Chris offered to write it for the DVD. And then Arthur Darvill, my understanding, basically volunteered to read that monologue in it, the letter in it.
Ugh.
Because... I don't think the scene would work if you had to read the letter. I think it only works because
you're reading everything else.
Yeah, you're reading all the other stuff. I mean, I would have liked to see I believe his name is Mark Williams actually get a chance to play Brian for that scene, because I think that would have been a really good moment as an actor.
It's the fact that they open with him watering the plants.
Yeah. Because the short opens with a reminder of the last of how the Power of Three ended. So in case...
Oh, yeah. In fucking case you forgot.
Yeah. In case you forgot how
his
last week went.
Cute little like, I'll just, somebody's got to water the plants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that's not part of the episode proper, but to me, that is how that story ends. Which is amazing to me because we've only known Brian since episode two of this season. It's episode five.
It's the fact that we do get as much as the afterword. Well, okay. Hold on. Brain is working so fast. Easy there, girl. Relax. What do you want to say? Okay, use your words. So Amy's afterword is written for the doctor.
Yes.
This letter is Rory's afterword to his dad. Father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like its inclusion. I understand why they didn't, but I kind of wish there was a way they could have added this onto the episode proper. The world is what it is. Like sometimes you just can't make it a reality.
Yeah.
But either way, that to me is the end of that story. I love that ending so much, especially for this season, where the season opens with Amy talking about how they can't have kids. And I think I'd even said in the episode that the obvious solution is to adopt.
Yeah.
They do. They adopt
in 1946.
They adopt one Anthony Brian Williams, who walks up to meet his grandfather, who is younger than he is.
I imagine, though, not by much.
I've had to do some quick paper math on it.
He was adopted in 1946.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that Brian. So Roy said it was 50 years before he was born. So I'd assume Brian was probably in his mid 20s when Rory was born. So just doing some quick napkin math, I'm assuming it's like 5 to 10 years older than Brian.
Hey, everyone, listen to our Doctor Who podcast where we do math. You'll have a great time.
Listen to us cry and do math. That's what's your favorite episode of the podcast, Billy? I like the episode where they cry and do math. I think maybe we should get into the episode proper a little bit here.
I feel vindicated in that they did say, all right, cool. So the last time we saw the angels, we did some silly bullshit. Let's reel it in.
Yeah.
And I've been going back and forth. When the episode started, I was like, it's weird that they chose Manhattan. Mm-hmm. When we live in a city called the Angels. Why on earth would you not have an angel-based episode take place in Los Angeles?
Yeah, and then you instead... I love the moment
the second that I went, oh, the statue. Uh-oh.
Yeah, they just did a quick insert of the Statue of Liberty. And I heard you go, is the Statue of Liberty a weeping angel? And I just said nothing.
Well, because it was the like wide shot. And I went, OK, we're in Manhattan. It makes perfect sense that you would show the angel. And then in the elevator, there was another picture of the angel. And I went,
another picture of the Statue of Liberty. Yeah, another picture of the Statue of Liberty. And then you get to the top and you don't even get to see its face right away. All you see is its open mouth and teeth.
It's maw. You can call it a maw.
Yeah. And before that, you hear ka-chunk.
Which just confirms that they do move. There had to have been somebody. I think that I'd call bullshit.
Yeah, somebody. How what do you mean nobody in New York City was looking at the Statue of Liberty?
Of people. Although if you considered like there are millions of people in New York City that are looking at the Statue of Liberty at any point in time.
Uh-huh.
Furthermore, there's also so many drug users. Reflect upon the Statue of Liberty, so I don't think it counts. Also, can I just say, if I mispronounce Liberty, it's because of that one fucking video of the kid saying, it's the Statue of Liberty.
I'm going to shit my pants.
Yeah.
Yeah, I...
So if I say Liberty, no, it's... I know I tried.
I also feel weird about the Statue of Liberty being... a weeping angel for that same reason. I think
she's literally called the Statue.
Yeah. Cause there is just a part of it. It's like you say in the episode, it's the city that never sleeps. So that means that someone's always up and around doing stuff. And you mean to tell me that no one is looking at the most famous New York landmark?
I don't think she gives two shits. I think that's a bad bitch right there.
When you're that big a weeping angel, you don't have to care anymore.
No.
I also like that for some reason, when it walks up, it's still doing the torch pose.
Well, that's how she has to trade. She can either move her arms or her legs. Similarly, though, I think the smaller the angel it is, the less it has to comply with... angel standards.
You mean like little cherubs? Yes, the moment I had written down as Cassie's least favorite moment was the moment the little cherub blew out one of Rory's matches.
Yeah, because I was like, I mean, this part's pretty scary. I need you to hear my internal dialogue. You ready?
Okay.
You ready? So the scene is going, and I'm going, yeah, this part's pretty scary. I don't like that one bit. Oh, no, that's very scary. Uh-oh. No! And... yeah,
because I really
know was literally when the match goes back on and the angel's sitting there with this little.
Yeah, my lips are already pursed because I remember when the first one showed up, you're just hearing its little feet and its little giggle. And you were like having a good time with it. You're like, this is so silly.
It is silly.
It's just a little guy.
I still think it's silly. Just
and then they start doing the like lights go in and out weeping angel movements and you slowly stop laughing. You're like, tick, tick, tick. Because you would ask me if I still
stand by. I do think it's I think that the laugh they chose for the angels is a little silly. It sounded a little chipmunky specifically. And I'm trying to emulate it as best as I can. There is another podcaster. On one of the shows that I listen to. We don't need to give them a plug, but I mean, we could, but I don't want to. But he specifically, whenever they're talking about haunted dolls or like little girls, it's this like, yeah, it's a 40-year-old man that just goes like, and it kills me every single fucking time.
Yeah. I agree.
So if ever you hear a Henry Zebrowski doing that,
I do agree that it's a little silly, but I think that also is what brings it back around to being really scary, because there's a part of you that's disarmed for them to be just as dangerous as the adult weeping angels. That they like just. But also in terms of points, so I guess I get the point for your least favorite moment, but you also get both your Cassie for Fassie points today because
Detective River Song,
Detective Melody Malone.
Melody Malone. That is a very New York name.
Yeah, well, she's also Melody Pond, so she didn't have to change her name at all.
No.
I do like the joke that the doctor reads about River in a book and is turned on by her. Is attracted to her in book form.
The way that, like, can I tell you something kind of like secret? I don't know if I've told you this before.
Uh-huh.
When we very first started dating, like, years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I like specifically missed you and was just like, I don't know about that guy, I would put on some of your videos and then go, ah, okay.
I did not know that at all.
Yep.
Because my videos are not attractive to anyone except for you, I guess, which is how I know we're meant to be.
Hey, Zach, would you jump off a building for me?
God, I mean, we're skipping way ahead the story with this one, but that was.
Well, because like there was a lot of things. So we'll come a little bit.
Yeah.
Written in stone. That was another one of my notes.
Yeah. Because the doctor talks about how if they read ahead in the book, they're making fixed time because for the perceiver, you can't alter time as you know it.
Which like there is. So there's a theory.
Mm-hmm.
There's a theory that specifically I'm forgetting what the like meta theory was, but somebody wrote. Like somebody compared it to like how you as a reader do not know inherently the ending of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So truly the ending of whatever book you are reading could change at a moment's notice. You wouldn't know what timeline you're in because you haven't read the ending of that book yet. And I think about that often as somebody with as crappy a memory as I have. The fact of the matter is I have reread some books 4 or 5 times and they're different every time. And I go, am I in different timelines every time I read one of these books?
I mean, the doctor seems to agree with that theory because he just rips out the last page of the book because he doesn't like endings.
Yeah.
I know you had joked that he was in the middle of the book. I think he was reading the middle of the book.
But I thought he pulled the page from the middle of the book.
Mm, I think that was the moment he was like, yeah, I'm going to finish this book. Rip, except for this page.
That way the book never has to end. Which, like, as somebody else who is also so adverse to change mm-hmm. and hates endings, I then have to think about my favorite song that all endings were just a new beginning's end. Closing time. I'm botching the lyrics, but you get the idea.
Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end.
Thank you. Yes, I have to think about that often. As somebody who is so adverse to change, this was one of the first times I could actually be, I was like, oh no, I absolutely agree with the doctor. 500,000%.
These last two episodes have been the most Cassie like the doctor has ever been.
Well, and it's only going to get worse. Spoilers.
What makes you say that?
The doctor having a full-blown meltdown and therefore changing the inside of the TARDIS.
Him going all dramatic girly pop makes you feel like you're going to be more like him.
Yes.
And also he gets really into purple.
Hey.
Because we got that suit still coming up.
Oh, my God. I'll have you know, ever since we did that episode, every time I go into a thrift store now, I am scouring for a purple coat.
Purple tweed.
Because not only then will I have my own 11th Doctor purple outfit, I will also have my Gene Wilder Willy Wonka coat. It works on two favors for me. Anybody out there finds a purple tweed coat that is my sized.
I do feel like I like the main conceit of this episode, that there have been weeping angels that have basically designed a cafeteria for themselves, where they will zap someone back in time and then make them just live in a room for the rest of their days until they will eventually be dying and meet their younger self before they got zapped back, thus guaranteeing the food supply.
Yeah.
I guess there's something kind of fucked up about it in a way that fits both versions of weeping angels we've seen. Because the first one, they sort of make them feel more like eldritch beings that like they're not organized. Yeah, they're not organized. They're not, or if they are organized, it's like a pack animal mentality more than it is like a binary good evil. It's more just like they're beings and this is how they eat.
The first time we see them, it feels way more chaotic.
Yeah, they feel
chaotic, but also not evil.
Yeah, they feel like they're beyond like human morality because the thing they do to feed is intrinsically evil to us, but to them it's just what they do. But then we get to the second story.
It's also not them actively ganging up on some, but it's not them hunting anybody down. It's whoever happens upon them. Yeah,
exactly.
Specifically.
Exactly.
And then you're not fucked all the way because you're still alive. You're not trapped. You just have to figure out how to make a life for yourself in a time that you did not come from.
Yeah. And when we get to, you know, their return and the flesh and stone two-parter, Moffat writes them as explicitly evil.
Yeah.
And so this has somehow found a way to kind of do both things.
This is a like, not a chaotic, like a lawful evil.
Yeah.
Like a chaotic lawful. If we can do cross.
They're chaotic evil creatures doing a lawful evil thing.
Yes.
Like they have come up with a way to ensure their food supply that is horrifyingly fucked up. So I like that conceit. I like that the Weeping Angels are an intelligent enough creature and are creative enough with their own. And they understand understand the rules of their own like weakness.
It almost feels like at this point they have evolved
a little bit. Yeah,
because flesh and stone, I feel like that is the outlier.
I feel like this is doing what flesh and stone was trying to do.
But this feels like way more of a sequel to Blink.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with that. This feels more like Blink, especially because, well, for one thing, the Weeping Angels aren't seen moving at any point. They don't do any of that weird CG like angel moving towards the doctor
that shit doesn't work.
Yeah.
That shit does not work. You have to have them be absolutely still until the camera pans behind somebody.
Yeah.
And then they move.
And I there's a part of it
there's
where it's
like, there's a practicality to it that makes it so scary and so yummy.
In the end, the story itself, like if you take the Weeping Angels out of it and make them just like a mad scientist type character. This is just someone that took a bridge too far with their plans, and now like their evil ways have been undone by their own actions, because their actions, while guaranteeing their food supply, also make for a place that can create a paradox that undoes their story. I think that's very interesting. They've taken what is basically a really simple story idea of someone suffering from their own hubris and made it feel fresh just because the Weeping Angels are the ones doing it.
Yeah. And the Weeping Angels already are unlike anything else that exists.
Yeah, I like that we open with this this private investigator guy.
Oh my god, poor fool.
Yeah, and he goes up to the winter key, and he goes into a room, and he's like, "Who? Don't make fun of the fact that my voice cracks. I can't help it. Sometimes things just happen, and I can't stop it." He goes into a room, and there's just an old man, a room that he's only like interested in because it has his own name on the placard, which very you move. If you walk past a room with a name plaque on it said Shima, C, you'd be like, that must be me.
I would love to agree with you. But fun fact, when I was a kid, one of the kids in my grade, his mom was remarried. So he kept his original name, or like his name, but her name was one letter off from mine. So she was Shema and I was Shima. So oftentimes people are like, "Oh, are you related to insert name here?" I was like, "No, it's because our names are entirely different." So if I saw another C Shima, I'd be like, "Oh, interesting.
Must be that kid."
Now, genuinely, if I saw like a CP Shima, I'd be like, "Oh no, what I got the middle name do?"
I just feel like you would at least poke your head in the room just to see who shares so much with your name.
I don't know. Because then I feel like if I opened up the room, the decorations in old lady me's house, it would just smell like a combination.
That's the thing.
Like incense covering up cat pee.
It would specifically have to be you walk up to the placard, see Shima Kamasi, and then smell just patchouli coming out of the room. And you're like, wait a second.
Patchouli, incense, and rose. Just billowing out.
So he makes his way.
So many cat smells.
So Mr. Detective Man.
Mr. Detective.
Makes his way into the room, and there's just an old man laying in the bed going, "I'm you. I'm you."
The way that I absolutely would do that to fuck with younger me as well, and just run. Get
it
out.
It feels like I get it. It's genuine with the Weeping Angels, but there is something very silly. Like, it feels like Horror Nights just ran out of budget for one maze, and so there's just a guy at a bed pointing at everyone. I'm you.
Well, because like,
I'm you.
When we fast forward to when we find out that Rory is also there, I specifically was like, "Oh, it's the same old man," and then I went, "Wait, no, it's not."
Well, that's the other funny thing about it is that
they gave them all like standard issue blue and white striped pajamas.
Yeah, they all have their standard issue Weeping Angels hand them pajamas.
Do you think the angels gave them a matching set, or did they all make everybody wear a nightgown?
Or do you think that they, when one person like properly dies, they just take them off that guy and give them to the next person?
Yeah, because they're not concerned about budget or comfort.
I'm just an angel. I don't have any money.
It's just all of the little babies.
The little cherubs working at three different points on a sewing machine together. Just one of them hopping up and down on the pedals. The weird thing about like that beginning to when Rory comes into it, though, is that in the beginning, it's a different actor. That's just an old man. But when they do it later, it's actual Arthur Darvill done up in old age makeup,
like semi-decent old age makeup.
Yeah,
too.
Semi-decent. Only it's also shot in kind of a low light scenario, but it's very clearly light.
It's not. I feel like this is probably like a foam latex because there was a little bit of like a weight to it that you don't get with silicone. But
yeah, it So it's just kind of silly seeing the like one where it's just like a genuinely, oh, you're an old guy. And you're like, no, that's Arthur Darvill in makeup.
And then he just grabs Amy's hands and please.
Amy, please.
Amy, please.
I feel like that was all another weird thing is I feel like later they have to justify they. Oh, yeah, we know that you two didn't stay together because he was so happy to see you because it had been so long. I feel like
flimsy.
I feel like really all you had to have him say was, Amy, it's been so long. That's all he had to say.
He was so old, though.
Yeah, he said he keeps going.
He was so old. All he could say was, he said, Amy, please, what, six times?
Amy, please, please, call a hospital. I'm having a heart attack right now.
Because if he says,
cardiac arrest.
It's been such a long time. That's six. He said, Amy, please, at least three times. He had the verbiage. He had the verb coinage.
Yeah, he had
for Amy. It's been such a long time.
Yeah, he had the words in his bank. He could have fished those out.
He just cashed all in on Amy. Please, Amy. Please, Amy. Please.
the little man in his brain can only slam one button down.
Can I say something kind of evil though? The way that the second he died, I was like, oh, you got to take his rings off now. That bitch is gonna get bloated as fuck. You gotta the way. This is not me saying this as a bit or to try to garner sympathy. When my grandma died, mm-hmm. the way everybody hopped onto her jewelry like eagles, not because it was like, that's mine, but it was like, get it off.
I can definitely see because it's also going to be one of those things that like it's
hard enough to take off jewelry off of a swollen finger as it is, but not when the blood is actively now starting to settle and pool.
Well, it's also like I imagine that it's one of those things. Like, yes, it feels weird to like jump for it, but it's gonna feel weirder the more you wait for it.
Oh yeah, because then at some point it's just
like it's either impossible.
You got to take it off when everything is still squishy, and yeah. also before the funeral directors come in and wheel the bodies away.
Yeah.
Sad, RIP, miss her every day. But the way that when Rory died, I was like, oh, you got to take that ring off. You got to take it off right now. It's going to be really hard in like 10 minutes.
But instead they didn't do that. They didn't take any rings off them. Instead, they went to the roof.
Instead, they
like you do
ran up to the roof. And then to solve the paradox.
Yeah,
which we're still getting a little bit.
Or to create a paradox, rather.
We're still getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
Yes, we are getting.
So we're going to go back. Who the fuck was that guy?
Oh, the guy that just has a weeping
angel.
Yeah,
who was Kingpin?
So he just, I guess he came across a weeping angel. So he's basically a collector. Like the idea is just that he's just.
Tanalea Tavon, the collector.
In a sense, yes, he likes to collect old and rare things, so that's why he has this vase from the Qin Dynasty and
that says yowza.
Yeah, and he is given a weeping angel, a statue that only moves when you're not looking at it. So it's, I think he liked it as like a prize.
Well, because he specifically kept her behind a curtain, meaning that she's just back there, just walking back and forth the whole time.
Well, I wonder if that was because I don't know if you remember him saying he did kind of a little experiment with her, because that if you looked at the angel, there's like chunks taken out of it, like it's got gash marks, because he wanted to know if it could feel pain. What the fuck?
Yeah. First of all, stay far away from him. Second of all, yes, because the bitch had her wrist in shackles.
Yeah. So she's like,
River even says she's screaming. You just can't hear it, but the others can.
Yeah.
That's why you have so many locks on your door.
Yeah, because the angels keep trying to get in to get him because he's torturing one of them. That's why there are the two. That's why there's that mother and daughter weeping or mother and child weeping angel that are just standing outside his window waiting for the door to be open.
Oh, my God. And that's why he freaks out when they're inside.
Because they were coming for him specifically. They came for him personally. Everyone else was just food. He was a treat.
What about the babies, though? They didn't seem too concerned about him. In fact, they threw Rory down with the babies just for fun.
Yeah, well, I mean, they also keep the babies locked in the basement. But because that angel's screaming has brought these other angels down into the area, they just decided, while we're here, why don't we set up a little food stand for us? Get us a nice little food truck going. We'll have it over here in this hotel.
Ugh.
So I like there's like moving pieces, but they do all make sense. Like when you think about them,
because we keep getting right to it and then we skip away.
Yeah, well, I did want to talk about them
specifically. Well, because there is another point with the collector and his scary ass angel and her ability to grab wrists.
Yeah, specifically the way it grabs River Song's wrist. They have this fun beat going through it where the doctor is very upset because they've been reading ahead in the story. He's like, well, now I have to break something. And it turns out the thing that has to be broken is River Song's wrist because it has been grabbed by a weeping angel.
Hmm.
And
can I just say something?
Mm-hmm.
I love the Doctor and River so much. I absolutely understand.
Mm-hmm.
The way, can I also be really frank?
I'd rather you be Cassie.
That's too bad, buddy.
Frank, what are you doing here?
I'm here now. It's my podcast.
Welcome to the Frank Show, baby. It's called Two Franks.
It's just me and a hot dog. That's it.
Hope you like the sound of me chewing on onions, relish, and peppers, baby.
Okay, the bit is dead now. So I've been specifically looking for Doctor and River fanfic because I absolutely understand all of the girlies that freak out over it, because the idea of having a partner, having a husband or a wife that is also a time traveler.
Mm-hmm.
She refers to her little like time warpy thing as a motorcycle through traffic. Oh my God. Can you be more of a babe, River?
Starts typing a message on it. And the collector's just like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, you know, just texting a boy. And I love the idea that he was like, I don't know what text. What do you mean texting? What is that? So, oh, right. I'm like 50 years too early for that joke to mean anything to you.
I love them together so much.
It is interesting to think that River has like a harem of men that's just one guy.
Like, hey, there's a part of me that's like, oh, my God, it's almost like not forbidden fruit,
mm-hmm.
but like very Romeo and Juliet, except River and the Doctor are not idiots.
Well, there is, I mean, like in the star-crossed aspect there, it does seem to be just like this unspoken agreement that they cannot travel together.
Can't have more than one psychopath in the TARDIS.
Yeah. Which this episode does have moments for both the Doctor and River where I have to question why they're doing this to the person they love the most or supposedly love enough to marry. Because the Doctor is like really mean to River in that moment over the book. Or he's like, figure out how to get yourself out of it. Don't break your wrist just because we need to change the future. And he's like very mean about it. And then, you know, the Doctor's form of apology sort of is to use his regeneration energy to heal her broken wrist.
His regeneration magic.
Yeah, he gives.
You can call it energy all day long. That bitch has magic.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because he's sort of just giving her back what she gave to him.
Yeah.
Because when he was poisoned, she regenerated him by giving her him her
all
regeneration.
All of her regenerations.
Yeah, and now he's given some of it back to her to heal her
wrist. Yeah, and she's getting all pissed off.
Yeah, so there's a part of it where it's like, I don't like how the Doctor was like a big bitch baby. And his way of being like, well, I'm it's OK, I'm better now, is like, here, let me prove how I've improved by healing you. Like, that doesn't solve the fact that you yelled at her, Doctor.
Well, yeah, especially in her little conversation with Amy. They're talking about, I just wrote down the phrase, wrist hurts, too.
Yeah.
Just because they're talking about how much it hurts.
Yeah, specifically, I believe the Doctor's behavior is what hurt her in that case. But there's also
it was something to do with, I don't know, editing, Zach, put in the moment here.
When one's in love with an ageless god who insists on the face of a 12-year-old, one does one's best to hide the damage.
Yeah, that's the stuff.
Yeah, that. I think it's what makes the River and Doctor's relationship so captivating,
mm-hmm.
and unusual, because you can't do something like that, and it's impossible to do something like that in real life.
Mm-hmm.
there are no time travelers that we know of.
I mean, there's no way to meet someone in the wrong order, but I do think that there is an interesting idea of like a couple that is married but only gets to see each other. I mean, that's sort of a military wife thing. Someone who's like deployed often and comes back home and they just sort of meet every so often. Like, it's obviously going to go a little off track there, but to an equal and opposite fashion, River also doesn't do a great job of being the doctor's partner.
No.
When he's like, his best friend just died effectively to him. River has already established that she can go back in time and give Amy this book so she can publish it to make this whole story happen. So River didn't really lose. I mean, River can't go like traveling with her family anymore, but she can go visit them from time to time. The doctor can't. He can't take the TARDIS there without blowing New York City up. So he's sitting there mourning the death of two of his best friends to him. And River's like, yeah, sorry, babes, I can't stay. Can't be two psychopaths in the TARDIS, am I right? And the doctor's like, yeah, I guess not.
Yeah, but then she also has to remind him, like, they were my parents.
Well, that's the thing. The doctor is the one who says they were your parents. I wasn't thinking about that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But again, River can go back.
Why can't she just loan the doctor her little her Apple Watch?
That's a good question, Cassie. It's almost like that wasn't super thought out by Stephen Moffat when he wrote that moment.
We've seen other people use that technology.
We saw the doctor use it when Jack Harkness had one.
Yeah.
In season one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's
so there are several.
Yeah. The doctor just doesn't like using them philosophically. He thinks it's like dirty time travel. But I feel like he would make an exception to go see two of his best friends.
Yeah. Or at the very least, the doctor didn't ever go say hi to Brian. Well, I guess it's only been a week.
Yeah.
Brian's time. It's only been a week.
Yeah, he might need some time. He needs some time alone before he's ready to go talk to Brian about, hey, so I need to tell you something about your son.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he can never go back and talk to Brian.
Yeah.
Because Brian is the one that said, well, they loved you so much, they can't quit you, and you can't quit them.
Just bring them back safe.
Nah!
So the doctor cannot come back because they cannot come back safe.
Yeah, because the doctor failed.
Yeah, I do.
He failed in that, Zach.
I like one nice thing about this like fixed point thing that they've done is they've already shown you the consequences of trying to break a fixed point, because that was what happened in the finale of last season where all of time was happening at once. Mm-hmm. So they've established like he could try, I guess, but like at best, he creates this time paradox situation where all of time happens at once. At worst, he blows up New York City.
Because now we've
getting into the wibbly wobbly bommy wommy of it all.
We've arrived to the whole paradox of the of the whole thing of Rory trying to heal the paradox by jumping off a building and killing himself.
Yes, they get to the roof. And they are approached once again by Statue of Liberty.
The Maw of Miss Liberty herself.
Lady Liberty's lovely lips is at the roof with them. And they are. And Rory realizes that the only thing he could do an easy way to create a paradox is to die twice in the same night in the same building. But 40 years difference. And so he gets up on the ledge and he basically starts like saying that he's not brave enough to make the final push. He needs
Amy to do it for him. Coward.
What was funny is in that moment you had looked to me and said, would you make me do this? And then not a second later does Amy go, what would you do if you were in my place? Would you make me do this?
Hey, I'm not saying I see a lot of you and me and Amy and Rory, but I'm not saying that.
And then you turn to me right after and be like, I feel like if you were going to make me do this, though, I would have to get up and jump with you. And then immediately after that, Amy climbs up on the ledge with Rory. Yep. And they're like, we both have to go together.
Yep.
And here we get to an interesting thing that we'll talk about more in future episodes.
Killing yourself?
Well, this is really a conversation I think a lot of TV and media in general has, where I don't think that was the show condoning that if your partner is going to jump off a building, you should do it with them. I don't think that's what they were saying you should do.
No.
But I could see someone.
But if you did, it'd
I
be
could
okay,
see someone
right?
thinking that's what the takeaway was, is they're condoning. They're condoning this
double suicide.
This double suicide as like a good thing people should be doing, as opposed to just the consequences that these characters as the choices these characters as people would make, including their flaws. I there's been episodes of Doctor Who often where the Doctor does things that are, I think, morally questionable, if not outright repugnant.
That's a SAT word.
But I think a lot of it is like it depends on if you view the Doctor as a character that you're supposed to emulate or as a three-dimensional character that has both, that is a capacity for both good and evil. We'll get to those more when those episodes happen, but I felt like this was a good like microcosm to talk about.
I like that this is a conversation we're having before Capaldi. I feel like he's responsible.
Capaldi
for
will be
them.
Interesting for sure.
It's something that is really sticking with me. Just there is something to be said of like Amy and Rory's story is one that has had a push and pull since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I am really happy to see that by the end of their story, we do see two people that really, really love and care about each other and cannot live life without the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sad and tragic, but also kind of nice because in the beginning, it didn't really seem that Amy particularly liked Rory.
Yeah, so you seem more like she was settling for Rory.
Yeah.
But then by, especially the last Centurion. The last Centurion moment, I feel like that really was a big, not a big turnaround, but a big like culmination of that arc. And I'm also glad that they, for the last few episodes, have fully dropped the Amy has the hots for the Doctor thing. Partly because she's her son-in-law, but also just because like it really was like putting a downer on that arc, and I'm glad that they found a good way to like.
It felt more towards the end there that like Amy and the Doctor were very good platonic.
Yeah, friends. And moreover, it was really good that the way that story ended was by Amy literally telling the Doctor, no, I'm going to be with Rory.
Yeah. Because it would have, and
it's a full like 180 from where that character was.
That's like the biggest kicker for me,
mm-hmm.
is the fact that everything would have been fine had Rory not looked at the fucking headstone.
Yeah, there's a couple of times where Rory gets just like pulled in a direction. Like, he doesn't really have a compulsion to go into the Winter Key and go find his room. I think the implication is that the Weeping Angels sort of like nudge you that direction.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's the implication here, too, is the Weeping Angels were sort of nudging him towards the gravestone.
Well, because she was specifically behind him.
Yeah.
She came out of nowhere.
Yeah. So I think the implication is that the Weeping Angels have some sort of like slightly psychic ability to like nudge you in a direction to call, to beckon you to come hither.
Well, yeah, because otherwise, like, there would be no way for you to happen upon a Weeping Angel if not for kind of psychic influence.
Yeah, so
energy flux.
So we could put it to that as that
magic.
The Weeping Angel, like, just called Rory over to look at his own headstone because that's what they were doing in the Winter Key. They were making them come and look at their own death. So in a very similar fashion, they're doing the same thing in that graveyard. I definitely think it's an interesting way to have companions leave where you other, because they kind of wrote themselves into a corner otherwise, where Amy and Rory have a house and jobs and lives, and they live them and see the Doctor at the same time. So they can't just be like, hey, we're going to go and do our normal thing, Doctor. Bye. We'll see you later. Because the Doctor just, they've been
spirited away by the Doctor one too many times now for them to just say we're done.
Yeah, just to say we're done.
The only thing that might have changed is if they were like, look, we got a dog.
His name is Brian.
Yeah, and he gets really sad when we're not here. He tries to jump on the refrigerator and we just can't keep letting that happen. He'll get stuck behind the cabinets.
And so it was an interesting way to find a way to not kill them, but give them an ending where that could not that made sense for them. Like, there's definitely still some like some wibbly wobbly BS where like, can't the doctor just grab the time vortex manipulator? But it's still just like, I get it. I understand the like. But also, I like that they had found a way to get around it. There's a part of me that kind of likes the last season where the doctor gives them the house and the car as their ending, because I like the idea of the doctor's companions having just a happy ending together.
The doctor's companions not being freed, because it's not that the doctor ever like is keeping anybody hostage. Mm-hmm. Everybody stays with and around him because
they like him.
They are captivated by him.
Mm-hmm.
He's fucking Peter Pan. Like, you know, if you have the ability to go to Neverland and never grow up and just to have exciting adventures all the time, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, like I keep saying over and over again that particularly Matt Smith's Doctor has a Peter Pan like quality, mm-hmm. and it just keeps getting proven to me over and over again, which is like also kind of fun because then that makes River Wendy Darling, which like, oh,
is she Wendy Darling or is she
Tinkerbell?
Tinkerbell would make more.
Well, because like it's
I think Amy would be Wendy.
Yeah, or Tiger Lily. But
that's who I was trying to think of. I would think River Song could be Tiger Lily.
But I feel like River Song is more of a Tinkerbell.
Yeah,
I would even though it's never like she just gets jealous. Like she's not fucking Peter Pan. Although like he could figure out how to
shrink
down.
She's Peter Pan sexual.
She's small enough. She'll figure it out. Anyways, that'll be a little art project for me to draw.
Alex Kingston as Tinkerbell.
Yes.
I am.
But so it only makes sense to me then to have, because you have already, they've already planted the seed by saying that Amy and Rory could not choose whether they wanted to keep living their Neverland lifestyle with the doctor or if they wanted to just grow up and have their own lives and have normalcy, because they wanted the doctor around as much as he wanted them around. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they are now placed into a time period in which the doctor cannot come back.
Yeah.
They are stranded. They basically have done they've done another Rose situation where they are unreachable,
mm-hmm.
to the doctor, which like I suppose when you have a being that is omnipresent such as the doctor, it's a little bit harder to justify somebody distancing themselves from him,
mm-hmm.
when he has the means. He's like Santa.
He just shows up. Well, they even say in The Power of Three that he's been a part of their lives on and off for the better part of 10 years.
Yeah.
It would be kind of weird for them to just be like, and we're done. It's not like when Martha was done. She's like, yeah, you've kind of been a dick for the last few weeks of my life, so I'm going to go do something else. You can't really do that after 10 years.
No, particularly since Amy and Rory and the doctor all seem to really care about each other. And especially when Amy and Rory's child is the doctor's wife.
Yeah. Again, like another hard thing to get away from. But Amy and Rory have, by all accounts, been our longest running companions. The only one maybe more debatable is Rose, because she did have some sort of presence for series 1 through 4. At some capacity, like she was in a few episodes of series 4. She's referenced all the time in series 3, and she's she is the companion of series 1 and 2. But in terms of like,
and she's in a and there's a graphic novel where she's the companion.
But for continuous episodes, Amy and Rory have been the companions for 2.5 seasons. I guess Rory's really 2 seasons because he joined halfway through series 5. But Amy's been there for 2.5 seasons. Amy is our longest running companion so far.
Mm.
How are you? How did you feel about them overall now that their story has concluded?
I really liked them.
Yeah.
Like knowing that I'm not going to be getting any more, it like, here's how I equate it, and here's how my brain is metabolizing.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like when you have a coworker that you're not, like, best friends with, but, like, you're friendly, and the second that they're gone, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Things are different now.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it'll be like that, where mm-hmm. it's not me sitting here being like, the same way that I am, knowing that we will never see Brian again.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I'm not going to be.
You're not mourning them, but
well,
you are.
Well, granted, it's also like my love-hate relationship for this fucking show. Like, I am excited to see what comes next.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, if something like that had happened to River, full stop, we would no longer have a podcast. You fucking touch her, you're dead.
I mean, that was how her first episode was. Her first episode was that ending. One day, David Tennant will look into River Song's eyes and have no idea who she is. After all of this together. I really like Amy and Rory. They're definitely in. If we consider them as a pair, I think they're definitely in my top five companions, maybe even higher, maybe top three. I think they're fantastic. I thought they had great dynamic. I thought having a married couple on the TARDIS was a very, like, different feel from all the series of 20 something girls that David Tennant kept picking up.
Well, especially since Amy is very capable.
Yeah.
And stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something that both the Doctor and Rory love about her.
Yeah.
But it's also something too that it's like, okay, cool. We as the audience can rely on at least Amy not following the Doctor's, like, directions and being a little agent of chaos.
Yeah, the only thing that really that I feel, you know, still is just I don't know where they would have put it in, but it's always felt weird that Amy's, like, trauma from her baby melting in her arms never came back.
I mean,
but it also isn't, that's not this kind of show.
That, and it's also the, like, yes, it's traumatic, but also she gets to see who her baby is.
Yeah. And,
you know, she gets to have this very unique relationship with.
She might also just have more resilience given all the other things she's had to do with the Doctor.
Yeah, because that particular payoff would have been one that happened the episode following.
Mm-hmm.
And because we didn't get it there, we were never going to get it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying to hold more secrets for the show. Like, I feel like I've not spoiled, but I've preemptively told you what an episode's going to be for a few series. And
so I forget each and every one of them.
Well, no, what I mean is, like, I'll tell you, this is our last episode with this companion. This is our last episode of this companion. This is the first time I ever got to really just, like, mum and just not say anything and let it play for you. And I wanted to see how it hit. And I do think it was a better experience for you. At least it seemed like you were. I think.
I mean, it's also something too, where, despite my complicated relationship with the show, there are a few things that have happened that I really, really like.
Mm-hmm.
Daleks being one of them, K-9 being another, and Weeping Angels being the third.
Yeah, those are,
I think, it's kind of a soft guaranteed of if one of those three things is so much as mentioned.
River being the fourth.
Oh my God, River! Yes, absolutely. I mean, like, things. Well, I guess River is recurring. Fuck. Okay, top five. Rose being five because I love Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then anytime they use regeneration energy is fucking magic.
Regenerations are always an exciting time for the show because
that's
it means
magic. It's not anyway.
It's the show is science fantasy. It's not. It's
science magic.
It's science in the same way that the Force is science. You know what I mean? Like
well, because the Force is just energy. You can practice the Force in real life.
Yeah,
people will make fun of you.
Energy.
No. I mean, I guess lizards have that. Only for their tails.
But yeah, as you noticed, the next episode of Matt Smith's run is, in fact, his Christmas special called The Snowmen. But we will not be watching that next episode. Next time, we're going to take another little dip into the classic series.
Hooray!
Because this episode aired in October of 2012, so there was a little break for them. So we're going to take a little break as well to get one more little classic adventure. So we will see which one I have chosen. On the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
I hope it's a good one. Who is my doctor?
A good one is indeed.
Huh?
What?
That didn't make sense. Who? Where am I? Doctor Who? You know, River Foley said Doctor Who in the...
Moffat's just taking the piss out of you specifically at this point.
Yeah, he's doing the same thing that you do all the time with jokes that I think are funny. And then you also go, ha, yeah, that's funny. I'm going to say it all the time, always, like forever
you
now.
So, like you were so irritated by Doctor Who being the question that must never be answered. And now he's found a way to drop it in so many times this season. Including River Song saying it and a choir of Daleks. He's taking all your favorite things.
I know.
Like in two episodes, K-9's gonna float in going, Doctor Who?
Doctor Who? Who, Doctor?
Master Who?
I know that won't happen.
Affirmative.
Oh, man.
Now Cassie's sad three times this episode.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, indeed. Hey, you. Yeah, you with the face. Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. If you like this episode, be sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening now. Or you can find all of the podcast places you can subscribe to us over at wimdpod.com. That's WIMDPOD.com. You can find links to our socials and to our Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month, you can get episodes of this podcast a whole week early. Big thanks to all of our patrons for helping to directly support us, but extra special thanks go to our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett, David Gansel, and Travis Aiken. Next week, we're going to find out what killed the dinosaurs as we go back to the fifth Doctor story, Earthshock. So we'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now whose days, pal.